council with her back to whoever was passing through the area. Besides, the assembly was small enough to hold in your hand, and even if she turned around or glanced over her shoulder, she probably wouldn't have noticed it. Or maybe not, Harry thought. Maybe it was Taki herself. He carefully restacked the paper goods cartons and started to leave the lavatory. Then his bladder reminded him of why he'd come into the lab in the first place. The president stood at the forward hatch of Air Force One at the top of the stairs while the band played Hail to the Chief, and the crowd that had gathered on the tarmac roared their greeting. It was crisp and cool in San Francisco. Woolly gray clouds were building up along the row of hills that fronted the ocean. The president could not see either the Golden Gate or the Bay Bridge from where he stood, which disappointed him, but the familiar cadence of Hail to the Chief always gave him a lift. He smiled his brightest and waved both arms over his head while a phalanx of Secret Service agents, most of them in dark topcoats, filtered through the crowd. His team of security technicians was setting up the portable podium down at the bottom of the stairs with the teleprompters and blast-proof screens. Standing beside him, the president's chief of staff rubbed a hand over his shaved pate. "It's always cold in Frisco," Norman Foster complained. Mark Twain said the coldest winter he'd ever spent was one summer in San Francisco. The president laughed and said, "The crowd's nice and warm, Norm." Foster agreed with a vigorous nod. "That they are, Mr. President, that they are." The two men started down the stairs toward the knot of news reporters and photographers clustered by the portable podium, Foster a respectful two steps behind his chief. "It's supposed to start raining in an hour or so," Foster knew. "We'll be at the Cow Palace by then." But he couldn't help thinking that conditions would get much, much warmer if those two North Korean missiles reached the city. Across the bay at the Oakland office of the U.S. Weather Service, Sam Weathers riffled through the reports that were trickling into his desk. Reports on paper, most of them radioed or teletyped in from weather observation posts from California to Idaho. Weathers was a compactly built black man of 46, his shoulders wide and his gut still tight, thanks to weekly sessions on the basketball court at his local YMCA. He wasn't especially tall, but he was fast and had good hands. He would flash a big toothy grin whenever he worked the ball around one of those tall, gawky giraffes and scored another basket. He wasn't grinning now. His desk was covered with a slowly growing glacier of papers, none of them bearing good news. Sam had never intended to be a meteorologist. With his last name being Weathers, he thought it would be ridiculous to work for the Weather Service. Weathers from Weather. He could hear the snickering wherever he went. So he had majored in geophysics in college, then somehow gotten interested in atmospheric physics as a graduate student. By the time he had earned his PhD, jobs in atmospheric physics were scarce. So he took a temporary position with the Weather Service in his college town, Berkeley, hoping to transfer to NOAA's atmospheric physics section when the job market loosened up. 22 years later, he was still with the Weather Service. Weathers from Weather. With the satellites down and phone service jammed up the kazoo, Sam had turned to the service's radio system to get reports on the storm that had swept in from the ocean. Even that was hit and miss. Radio reception was mostly poor due to the storm, and more stations were going off the air because of power outages. Sam had rounded up a couple of kids who knew how to run the computer that fed the big electronic wall map. Even so, the map had large blank spaces.